The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
DGS on KMOX. Tomorrow we will be at the Hardee's in St. Peter's, Mid Rivers Mall, and Mexico Road. We will be bringing along 80 DGS hats to sell for $30 a piece. You can buy as many of those as you want within reason. I'm also bringing along a autographed Paul Goldschmidt baseball, a Adam Wainwright baseball, and an Oliver Marmol baseball. We'll be selling those for $125, $150 Goldschmidt down to Marmol. Of course, if you want to give more than that, a lot of people tomorrow will be showing up with bigger checks for hundreds of dollars. By all means, take a ball. You know, get there early before someone snags it for like a $125, which we checked it out, and that's less than they're going for on eBay. And
yeah,
I'm stupid because you always ask for more when it's charity, and I always ask for less for some reason, but whatever. We'll be fine. But we look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow. It's going to be a little chilly, but don't let that stop you. Come out, have some great Hardee's food, make a donation, bring the kids, teaching moment, that sort of thing. Matt Pauly joins us from the sports department. Hey, Matt.
Hey, I want somebody to show up first thing and buy all 80 hats right there and see your response to it.
I'd be fine.
I mean, you're going to take the money, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to say no.
Listeners might be a little mad.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. That person's cutting a fat check, so.
Buy all the balls. We also have a couple soccer players who signed the miniature soccer balls.
Oh, cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, some guy named Pele. I don't know.
Pele. Who's that guy?
I think it's Michael Pele.
Oh.
So, Matt, overall, how were the winter meetings?
I don't know. They were fine, I guess. I mean, nothing happened.
No big whoop.
Monday happened, and we found out officially that they were going to trade Nolan Arenado or wanted to trade Nolan Arenado, which we already knew. And then it was a whole bunch of, like, from a league-wide standpoint, an industry-wide standpoint, there was a couple things that happened. But it was not a lot when it comes to the Cardinals.
I hear you.
Yeah.
How did the Nolan Arenado Houston Astros deal hit you yesterday?
Okay, so this has been my big thing here recently. Bernie and I talked about this on Sports Open Line yesterday. I think sometimes we look at athletes and forget that they're human beings. Like, that's why there was such a reaction to the Angels being reportedly on his list. You know, we value different things in different ways. So I might value wanting to win baseball games at the same level that I value wanting to sleep in my own bed. So I think, and that's how I kind of took that. So when I hear that he doesn't want to go to Houston, the two things that jump out at me is A, if he's going to go to a city that maybe he's not super comfortable with, he wants them to be a World Series contender. This isn't just about going to a team that's better than the Cardinals, because on paper, the Astros are better than the Cardinals. It's about going to a team where he has a very good shot of winning the World Series. And then, yeah, the second thing that just kind of hits me is he's got the no-trade clause. He doesn't want to go to Houston. That's okay, and I don't think anybody should be mad at him about it.
Yeah, I think one thing that's difficult is, and we run into this a lot. I do on Twitter. Bernie and I did the Gas House Gang today, and we ran into it with some comments today. It's not always that easy for people to keep track of everything, so they only react to the most recent thing they saw, right? I mean, like, so the example of Arenado would be, you know, well, I thought he only wanted contenders, but the Angels were there. I said, well, they didn't say only contenders. They did say that that's kind of the goal, but you know, there are other things that go into that. And there's another part today with the Houston thing. He didn't eliminate Houston. He just said no for now. And it sounds like he has preferred places. So if you're looking at it from his perspective, as Matt's saying, Matt and I are on the same page with this. I mean, he has the right to go where he wants to go because that's what his contract says. And if he wants to try to get to the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Phillies instead of Houston, He's going to wait and see what happens with Alex Bregman, and then he will make a decision at some point on, you know, which one he would approve if the Cardinals present him with another offer. But he doesn't want to do that now based on all the reporting from Derek Gould and Katie Wu and everybody else. He doesn't want to do that with Houston now, but it doesn't mean he wouldn't in 3 weeks.
Anytime we try to compare our own lives to, like, athletes' lives, yeah, it generally doesn't go very far, but I'm going to try to do it here for a second. Years and years ago, I was offered two jobs, one in Milwaukee where I was going to be covering Major League Baseball, and one in St. Louis where I was not going to be covering Major League Baseball every day. And I really wanted to get back to St. Louis. That was a very big value for me, getting back to the city that I grew up in. But I also knew my career was being built around being around a baseball team. And as much as I wanted to come home to St. Louis, I ended up going to Milwaukee instead. Now, obviously, eventually I got home to St. Louis, which is a good thing, but we all value different things. And in that situation, I had to look at these different things that I valued, and I had to put one thing over the other. And I think that's what Nolan Arenado's doing. I think it's a really simple human being sort of thing.
Fascinating. So one thing I want to run by both of you guys, I thought you'd be curious to get your opinion on this too, Dave, is Bernie and I talked today about the Cardinals' recent run of success. And the last few years have been less successful, right? But even recently, you had four straight years where you made the postseason. You didn't do anything when you got there, but you were there. But this team, starting in around 2000, became a top-end team in Major League Baseball, a top-end team in the National League, and it basically lasted 18 years. The Whitey Ball era didn't last 18 years. It lasted 5 or 6 years. The team in the 60s, that didn't last 15 years. It lasted 6 years. And it's just funny how when you look back, you think of those glory days, and you're like, that was amazing, that was awesome. But it literally lasted about a third of the time that the Cardinals have had a competitive window open since 2000. And the Cardinals have two World Series in that time period, just like they had two in the 60s. They only had one in the 80s in Whitey Ball. Should have had two. There was one that could have been and should have been.
Thank you, Don Dekinger.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Don Dekinger. But do you guys ever think about that? Like how, historically speaking, if you bring up the Whitey Ball era, all anybody, I mean, it was like glorious. And it was. It legitimately was glorious and fun. And they won the World Series. And it was an identity that you could latch onto. But it was only 6 years is in quotes, because 6 years is a long time to have a good, strong, competitive run. But that's kind of my point. But from 2000 until about 2018, the Cardinals were always a contender and won two World Series, and yet people act like that didn't even happen.
Yeah, and I think you can push it back further. They were in the NLCS in 1996. Now, I know they had a few lean years following that. But, you know, from the moment that Tony La Russa walked in through that door, they became a very competitive, very compelling team through that period that you mentioned. And, you know, I'm just hopeful that, because right now there is so much criticism and really hate towards the ownership and also John Mozeliak specifically, and I just hope that as time goes by, what you just said, Kevin, people can look back and realize how good of an era we have lived through for Cardinals baseball really since the moment the DeWitts took over.
So putting those things together, because I've listened with great interest to you guys talk about this now for quite a while, and you talk about how the Cardinals did things the Cardinals way, and it worked out really well, and then other teams started to develop new ways, and we didn't. We didn't follow along. We kept going with the Magic Cardinals kind of thing. So does that mean that it just so happened that in the era of success, there is a true sea change in Major League Baseball, and we just kind of didn't pick up on it?
Kind of, but I'm you can help me out better with this, Dave, than I can, because you're better with music than me understanding it. But this is kind of like how musical tastes change over time, but a band is what it is, right? Like, how many bands do you know can adapt from one popular style to another and not lose anything?
Right.
And not change. Like, if you take the hair metal bands and somebody comes out and plays, like, super heavy on guitar solos and all that now, it's nothing. Nobody cares. Nobody wants it. It's not in demand. But you could still be what you, but that's what you are, right? That's what you are if you're Motley Crue. That's what you are if you're that kind of a band. The Cardinals were good at their thing, and I think people underestimate how difficult it can be to change what you are as an organization or even as a human being. Your strengths are your strengths, and if those strengths no longer work, maybe that's why it's time for the Heim Bloom era to begin and why it's time, because in every example I can think of, this type of change happens. It happens to actors. You have to be something else, right? Leonardo DiCaprio is not the same guy or playing the same roles that he did when he was 22.
Let me give you another analogy. So when I started my radio career 24 years ago, radio, including my show, was very bit-driven.
Oh, right.
Dave and Wheels are going to oil wrestle. Tune in at, 2:30. And over the quarter of a century I've been doing this, I have matured. The show has matured. The show is much less bit-driven, much more organic. But if bit-driven radio hits again because people have forgotten it even existed, suddenly my show is less relevant. So my question to you guys would be, the changes in the major leagues, is it novelties, sort of bit-driven radio, or have they really discovered something that is a change for good and the Cardinals just didn't get hip to it? Like with all the, I forget the word, the analytics and such.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a change for good, but I do know that it is a, they understand now better than they ever have before what leads to winning baseball games. And sometimes you win baseball games in a way that is less aesthetically pleasing than the way people won baseball games in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I would argue that is happening right now. But again, it's not nobody, no president of baseball operations gets hired or fired based upon the idea that they're putting together a roster that's aesthetically pleasing.
Right.
You want to win baseball games. So I don't think this is cyclical where we're going to go back, bell bottoms might come back into, people might start wearing them again. I don't think we're going to go backwards in baseball because it's not something that's trendy. It's something that's based off data and information and us learning more about the game. Now, we might learn more and more and more, and that can tweak things even further, but I don't think we're going back in time on this one.
No, and I think, Dave, it's what's changed is less the analytics side, because I think the Cardinals are decent at that. It's more about the innovation on things like biomechanics. It's more science-based. I mean, that's the way the game has trended in the last handful of years, last 5 to 10 years. It's way more, and I don't just mean math. I mean, like, literally physics. Physics and biomechanical engineering. Like, those are the newer ways. And when you're having success, you're not typically looking to change, right? It's only when you start to have problems that you look to change. And think about it, that's any business. That's almost anything. And that's why in sports, you see cycles. The Patriots are not good anymore, in part because the brains behind what made them great, it's no longer there. The way that basketball is played has changed. So the things that were good before are not going to work as much now, because of the way things have changed. And it's not, I think it's much more of a natural cycle, but I do think it's something that organizations could be more like DGS and adapt more as you go. But I understand why we've had success doing this way, evaluating players a certain way, training them a certain way, that we're going to keep doing that until it doesn't work. And then when it starts to slow down and stops working, then you got to make changes. And I think my argument, I wonder if you would agree, Matt, is it probably just took the Cardinals a few years too long to realize that the changes were starting to pass them by.
Yeah, and a lot of us saw it, but they kept winning at the big league level, and it had a lot to do with the fact that Yadier Molina was around and some other really impactful players that were able to help the team continue to thrive, even though they were kind of doing things not as advanced as other teams. And then once some of those people walked out the door, the problems, the red flags that had been kind of flying, all of a sudden that was the downfall over the last couple of years.
And I want to be clear, too. Like, I'm not trying to – none of this is meant to excuse anything. You still have to be adaptable and be able to make changes and catch up. And instead of catch up, like, stay on top. Like, there's no excuse. It's not saying, oh, this is okay. But it is the normal course of things in sports. That's what happens. It's happened in look how fast it changed for the Cubs. They went from the toast of baseball in 2015 to back to being pretty mediocre and crappy really fast. That didn't happen to the Cardinals. They went 20 years of that. And we tend to act like that didn't happen and that these guys are just idiots that didn't have one of the longest runs of success in franchise history.
So barring us picking up some stud that we just is not on our radar right now, if we're playing with this team we think we're going to play with pretty much, not to be homers and not to be Debbie Downers, but what's reasonable to think that we could get back to a perennial playoff team? One season? Three seasons?
Look, they could be a playoff team this year if things fall right. If Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman take steps forward, this team could be or have a, be around 500. If you win 85, 87 games, that might be enough to get you into the postseason. But this year is more about what's going to be going on underneath the hood. And for all of that to start impacting the big league roster, that's going to take 3 years, I would think, for it to be having a major impact. Now, if they do what they say they're doing, they are going to be adding a lot of computers and technology and things like that, that especially come not this spring training, but the next spring training and next off season when players are able to go to Jupiter and be at the complex. Those are going to be tools that are going to allow players to become the best version of themselves. So that's a really important part. But as far as Heim really getting the player development system humming along and producing high-end talent out of the minor leagues to the big leagues, I think that's a few years down the road.
That's Matt Pauley. Thank you, Matt.
You bet.
426 DGS, couple more Throwback Thursdays.
Yeah, 247 years ago in 1777, George Washington had the Continental Army set up camp for the winter in Valley Forge.
God, that must have sucked.
Yeah. Oh, man.
We always talk about how the past Valley Forge during that winter must have sucked.
Anytime I run outside in the winter in shorts and a t-shirt and sandals, to take the trash out or something, I'm just like, holy Lord. They were basically dressed no shoes, no socks for weeks.
And then 200 years after that, you had the same thing in the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
You're like, what? It's crazy.
Humans can take so much.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And yet we can also be big babies.
Yes, we can.
And I am one of those big babies. 181 years ago in 1843, A Christmas Carol, the story of Ebenezer Scrooge and Tiny Tim by Charles Dickens, was first published in England. I love A Christmas Carol. You tell me there's some version of A Christmas Carol on TV and I am locked in. Yeah. I just absolutely love that story.
Humbug.
Too boring?
Boring.
I've never been a fan. But I also think part of it is just growing up, it was always black and white and old-timey, and I never liked that.
Mm. 107 years ago in 1917, the first two hockey games were played in the NHL.
Ooh.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. You ever seen Muppets Christmas Carol?
Yeah, probably.
No Sale?
Nah.
It has Michael Caine.
Oh, yeah, I like him.
And Kermit.
And Kermie. 44 years ago in 1980, Dolly Parton made her movie debut with the release of 9 to 5, and she won 2 Grammys for the title song. Yes, Dave?
Nothing.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and
the song or the movie?
I'm the only person that has a little bit of a Dolly Parton thing.
I think you are the only person.
You don't like Dolly?
I don't dislike her.
She's the sweetest thing.
She's no Tom Hanks.
This is why.
It's hating Betty White.
This is why I shouldn't say anything.